Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. Stephen Hunking has been making music under the Dewclaw moniker since 2004, but he's been recording and releasing albums since the 1980s, beginning with the band Hypno Love Wheel. The latest Dewclaw release, ELF, finds Hunking collaborating with his childhood friend Chris Zephos of King Missile fame across a series of songs that were initially inspired by Hunking's deep dive into the music of ELO. In addition to making music, Hunking is now a flower farmer. He and his wife, Annie, relocated to Washington State several years ago and founded Mooncake Flower Farm, an endeavor that he says has provided many new inspirations in several areas of his life. That's Stephen Hunking of Dewclaw on Into Music coming up now. So where's home for you?
I'm in Camas, Washington right now, which is about a half hour from Portland.
Oh, okay.
I was an East Coaster my whole life. I was born and raised in the New York area. And after decades of that, my wife and I were like, we have family out here. She has family out here. So we were like, we don't want to do what we've been doing, which was a lot of corporate media stuff. We were both on that end of things. And we were like, let's start a flower farm. So that's what we're doing. And it's awesome. We're in our fourth year out here, and it's pretty crazy. It's really been like a complete just inversion of everything.
Wow. Yeah, that's a huge relocation and just change.
Yeah. Yeah, we were ready. I mean, honestly, you know, like we like for years we were looking for a way out of our out of the situation we found ourselves in. And I'm not trying to speak badly. I mean, I had really great jobs. I had a lot of fun projects. My wife Annie is a photographer who produced a lot of really amazing shoots for magazines over the years and stuff. So we had this like great life, but I think there was a point of diminishing returns, and the industry is kind of changing, and we were kind of like, we want to simplify. Like, I don't want to work from 6:30 in the morning till 9 at night. But the joke is, farming is basically 24 hours, so but it's a little bit different kind of lifestyle.
Making that transition, did that inform your creativity at all?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great question, because yeah, absolutely, 100%, because it's really funny. So in Camas, there's like, you know, there's the city of Camas, which is very small, like the town, and there's a lot of strip malls, but where we are is called Fern Prairie, and we're a little bit into the kind of into the mountain area. So it's really just like 15 minutes from town, but it's another world. Like, I'm looking out my window right now, and all I see is like pine trees that are like five stories, six stories tall surrounding where we live. And we have neighbors, but, you know, they're kind of further away. Some of them are pretty close to us, but I know all my neighbors and I like all my neighbors, but like, I don't really see them. I mean, we're like in this kind of fishbowl world of farming and creative adventures. Like, she's always taking pictures of everything. I try to squeeze in my music projects in between all this and just growing stuff and selling stuff and meeting people in the farming community and actually learning farming, which is like she knew more about it than me, but I had to come out here and actually find a sympathetic farmer who would train me. And I just worked, you know, for free on his farm for a season. And I'm still very good friends with him. I still help out. And so he's my mentor, basically.
Well, I mean, that's kind of the way that farmers have done it for centuries, right? Like, You don't know something, you ask somebody and
And I have to say, like, farmers are pretty cool. Like, they're all like, I haven't met any yet that have been withholding or like, oh, we're not, yeah, I don't divulge my secrets or whatever. I mean, everyone's very enthusiastic. People love to see what you're growing. We know other flower farmers out here, which has a surprising amount of musicians in it too, which is very strange to me. They're like all drummers. So I don't know. I'm the only one that's not the drummer. Yeah. So pretty crazy.
is that a community that's been growing?
You know, I think actually the farm community out here is probably shrinking. And, you know, a lot of developers, and I don't really, I'm not going to be down on developers or whatever, but it's weird. They just kind of like where we are, you currently can't develop where we are, right? There's like these parcels of acreage. We live on one of them, and you can't break it down below that. You can't sell it off little chunks, you know. But the developers love to come in because they need housing. We all a whole I you know United States, we need housing, right? So the developers come in and they'll take over like, you know, 10 acres, and they'll just like throw all these houses, which is great. But there's not necessarily a lot of planning in the community. And I think farmers struggle because they're used to, they kind of were more like big ag, but they weren't big enough to be really big ag. So we're in a position where a lot of these farmers out here get very small and they sell locally to the community, which is great, right? And the community really supports it, which is kind of amazing because we didn't know, we're going to grow flowers, but is anyone going to buy flowers? I feel like I'm on a flower podcast and I'm actually really digging that vibe. That's pretty cool. But yeah, it's interesting. I could go on and on and on about it. And I love talking about it. I'm not trying to say I don't want to. I'm really into it. Yeah, it is just an interesting situation we find ourselves in, and it was purposefully done, you know. We had a million other ideas for small businesses we could do, and she loved growing flowers back in New Jersey when we lived in Maplewood, New Jersey, and she's like, "I want to do a cut flower farm," and I was like, "Let's do it. Let's get out of here and let's go someplace new." I'm glad she picked flowers. I would have probably agreed to anything.
I grew up in a farming community, primarily,
Oh, cool.
cattle and so
Yeah,
forth
sure.
in Michigan. And it's interesting because when I was growing up, there'd be 10 farms, 10 families, and now there's like 3 farms, 2 families.
Yeah, because it's hard for anybody to really make a living. Like, I mean, you know, look, I'm no spring chicken, so like I'm not exactly at retirement age, but you know, we had a house, we were able to kind of sell that and buy this property, which was really, really kind of amazing and lucky. It was a very lucky situation, although stuff is a lot cheaper out here. It was. I mean, everything is crazy now, but yeah, I think farmers get squeezed out of the community, but there are people in the community that are like, hey, I want to buy local. I don't want to have to, you know, go to all, you know, the big box stores to get stuff cheap. I'd rather spend a little bit more and know what I'm getting.
Yeah.
Flowers are different. It's not, I mean, there are edible flowers, but it really is kind of like, it's really, it is a luxury, but we try to meet every price point for everybody. We're not just selling to like an elite, yeah, group of people. And we grow pumpkins too in that season, which is fun. We grow like every pumpkin imaginable.
I promise we'll talk about music,
No, I don't mind. Listen, whatever you
but
want. I am up for the adventure. I love talking if you haven't figured that out yet. But I'll talk to you about whatever you want. Totally on board.
I would think flowers would be difficult because they have a relatively short life.
Yeah.
So to get
That's
them from grow to market,
Yeah.
and they still have some sort of life left in them.
Yep. So you touched on a really interesting point, which is, you know, it's funny. We just did a plant sale recently. We got these like one-off T-shirts made for ourselves. Our, our uh, I'll I'll uh, I'll pitch my flower farm. It's Mooncake Flower Farms. On our shirt, on the back, our slogan is, local flowers last longest, because we have people, they sign up for a subscription, right? They'll get like a bouquet, a weekly bouquet over the summer season into the fall. And a lot of them are buying every week, but then they cut back to every 2 weeks because the flowers last 3 weeks. They're like local, so they're not being shipped up from someplace way down south or, South America or Central America. And everything, when we sell, we cut like the day we sell. So flowers have like a weirdly long lifespan, but I guess the beauty of them, like kind of, I guess even music, but they don't last for a long time, So you have to kind of get the flower again to repeat the experience, I guess. I don't know, but and also we can grow things that they can't grow and ship, because we can grow flowers that don't do well for shipping but do great locally. Yeah, we got like a little farm stand down here. We go to farmers markets, we go to pop-ups, all sorts of things.
How much in what you do is there sort of like, I don't know, for lack of a better term, like education with consumers? Like maybe a consumer doesn't know about a specific flower.
So it's funny. I guess the more you know about anything, the more you realize there's like commonality between a lot of things, right? I'm not trying to steer it back to music, but like with music, you kind of go like, oh, what's the audience? Who is it? Like, who really wants this? And so on and so forth. And you start to find your audience. The flower is the same way. Like, I mean, I've never had the luxury, and I don't know if that's a luxury or a curse, but like I've never really had rabid groupies. I mean, I've had fans of stuff. I mean, I've been doing this stuff for like over 30 years or whatever, but I have people that know my history and will follow things that I do. But my wife Annie, like, without insulting the people that buy from our farm, like they're diehard, like, groupies is not the right word, but they adore Annie and they want to know what she's growing and they appreciate what she's growing because they kind of know the varieties that she's growing, right? So for the average person looking for carnations, they're probably not going to find that here, although we might get some weird carnations and grow them, but we grow a lot of like unusual stuff. So word gets out and then more people come to it. And I guess it's similar, right, with music. Like for instance, you like finding this thing. I'm like, how did that even happen? Like, how did it get to you? And like, so yeah, we find our people that are into what we have to offer. And it just grows every season. It gets bigger and bigger, which is very cool.
Well, and there is that thing too with music that probably one of the reasons that you've had longevity and you have hardcore fans is that, like with your wife, there's some personality there. So people are feeling that connection. It's like, oh, yeah, I don't just like the music, but I like the person creating the music, you know?
Oh, well, that's I, you know, yeah. I mean, look, we joke about this all the time. I say to with Annie, I always say, oh yeah, I love people, and she'd be like, really? Because sometimes she can hear me go off. But I actually do. I love a connection, and I love talking to other people. And yeah, there are very few people who I won't talk to. I might form opinions afterwards, but like I don't know. I think when you have a really good conversation, it's not just that you're get like giving, but you're getting. Like right now, this is kind of cool because you've got questions and I've got questions and answers. Like, it's an engaged thing. So yeah, we're both pretty much like that. Probably me a little bit more than Annie, but yeah, sometimes I have to know when to zip it.
That's awesome. But yeah, I mean, I'm all for like having new adventures in life. And I mean, that's my, here in Kansas, I make this joke, and it's completely a joke, but they're talking about in Kansas making it legal to domesticate raccoons. And I've sort of joked like, when that happens, I've got my raccoon ranch.
Are you gonna be the like the guy in that raccoon hot dog video where he's like feeding the there's this video like that was viral. This guy's feeding all these like hundreds of raccoons, and I have to say I love raccoons, but I am terrified of raccoons, man. They are ballsy creatures. They will like walk right up to you. You can be like shoo, and they'll be like no. They'll just hang out. But we don't have too many of those around here, and we have a dog that runs around too. That kind of we didn't know this when we got her, but she's kind of like she's got a herding dog in her and a German Shepherd too. So she's like a farm dog protector, kind of like she just patrols the property. Yeah.
Well, to talk about the record, so where did this one kind of start? Is this just like this thing where it's like, yeah, it's time to make a record or
No, not at all. Like,
okay.
so it's a very organic and kind of cool situation, which is I put out an album a couple of years ago called Harpalation that was basically all me doing everything, right? And that's been kind of like my method with a lot of the Dewclaw stuff, although I have had really amazing players play on some earlier albums. But it's always just been me tinkering around. It's like, some would call it I don't know if you call it a hobby. It's just an obsession. I can't to do the double negative, I can't not write songs. Like I have to always be writing songs. It's just like an obsession. I love music. So with that album, I invited my friend Chris Zephos, who used to be in a band called King Missile. He just recorded with MX80 Sound. Anyway, he's a childhood friend, and we've been in bands on and off through the years. He mastered that record, and there were two songs on it that were kind of incomplete. And I said, do whatever you want with them, because I haven't really been like that in the past, but I'm like, what have I got to lose? Like, who's listening? I don't know. Let's have fun. Like, let's have a collaboration. So he helped arranged two songs on that and added some stuff to it. And it was so much fun that we said, well, we should do a whole album. And so that kind of came up, right? So we were kind of like, I was like, oh yeah, well, I have some songs for that. And then I had a project here on the farm. It always comes back to the farm, but we had to build a cooler for the flowers, which I build. I always try to do all these things. I research and then do it on my own. And there's all sorts of easy ways to make a cooler these days. So we needed like a 10 by 10 cooler in our garage. And in making that, I was listening to Spotify and an ELO song came on. And I was like, I love ELO, but I don't really know the catalog, In and Out or whatever. It's not one of those bands that I got obsessed with it. And I drove Annie crazy. Like she banned ELO from the house, essentially. She would probably less harsh words than that, but I was like listening nonstop. And a lot of that love came out of the band The Move, which became ELO, right? So I love The Move, and they're a little bit heavier, but they start to have that orchestration stuff in it. And I said to Chris, we should do something like The Move or ELO, but like our version of it, because we can't, e even if we tried to copy it, it would be. I'm just too quirky. It's too weird, right? We wouldn't be able to do it, but that's the influence. So we did that. He did some strings on one, and we were like, hey, this actually sounds kind of fun and kind of cool. And then out of that, when he said fun, I was like, I want to do something more joyful, and not jokey, but like, I'm not gonna, I don't want to comment too much and like whatever, but I just feel like the world just seems to be getting weirder and weirder and like less joyful. And there's only so much I can do about the weirdness. I have a voice, we all have a voice, but I wanted, if I was going to put something out in the world, I wanted to do something that might in spark some sort of joy, but not contrived, but just to try to really to find it for myself and try to put it out there and see who would, if anybody would pick up on it. And the response has been pretty sweet. It's been really nice.
Yeah, I mean this is funny to me in a way because I haven't shut up about this for 2 days. On Monday night, I went to see Gang of Four.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
First time ever seeing them, and it was very weird that they were in Wichita because this is not a place that a lot of tours come.
Right.
And I was like, and my friends were opening, and I was like, okay, I gotta go. And I did not stop smiling. Now, I mean,
Yeah.
they've got songs about
fascism and
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Well, there's even, I guess there's even, you find the joy not about the subject, but the reaction to it. There's solidarity, right? You're with people. He's up there bashing a microwave in. I don't know if he did that at your show, but like, there's something cathartic about it, and you feel yes, you want more of that. I had the same thing. I saw Kid Kongo Powers recently, and I was like, I'd never seen, I don't know how this is even possible, but I'd never seen him. And now I've seen him twice since, and that's just been in like the last 8 months. And just I could not stop agreeing. Like, this person has been through it all, is a genuinely cool person without trying to be. And just, I think he's a national treasure. Like, I saw that and I was just like, I felt good about it actually, because the sense of joy I got from it, I was like, that's what I'm trying to do. Like, I want to do this thing, while acknowledging that, yeah, there's a lot of challenges. Not to just be like, hey, put on a happy face, but like, this create an environment where like you can connect with other people that are looking for those kind of feelings in a time when they seem to be becoming less, and a lot of reasons to not have that. And I think that's part of, I think that's part of a strategy that maybe people, if you can eliminate joy, then maybe you can get away with a lot more. Maybe, I don't know, but I'm trying to combat that in my little teeny piece of the planet.
Right. Well, I mean, there's that old saying about, how comedies do better in movie theaters during times of economic struggle.
Yeah, because you need, yeah. I mean, I need it. Yeah, I definitely need it. So I think that's the other thing too. Like, I honestly, like, I don't know who said this. I don't know if it was, I can't remember, but like, somebody was saying like, oh yeah, I made that music because it's what I wanted to hear, and that's what I do to the best of my ability. I mean, whatever I'm putting out is something that I genuinely wanted to hear. Like, it's not, I don't have any delusions about the reach of what I do. Like, I know there's a possibility, I mean, honestly, like, the fact that I'm talking to you right now, if I'm really honest about it, it's kind of mind-blowing, because I would not have imagined, I just wouldn't have imagined that this was the thing that was on my list of things to do at this point. So it's kind of, yeah, it's kind of cool. I'm winding out and forgetting my point, but it's interesting. It's an interesting situation I find myself in. Yeah, but I want to make music that I want to hear first and foremost. That's where it always comes from. And then if you have a friend, if you have like a partner in crime, and that's always challenging. But like, Chris and I have known each other since we were kids, so to, we can reference like, oh yeah, that's like when the Jam did this, and then this is the orchestral version, and then they have the rockin' version. We did stuff like that. Like, there's a song on the album where it's all strings, and then we released a single this summer where it's guitar. And it was a trick, it's like a little fun game for us. Like, we're getting happiness out of it because we're like, oh, what other goofy things can we have an internal jokes about or strong feelings about?
Yeah, well, I mean, I would imagine that was, going to be my next thing is like knowing somebody that long, and especially childhood, where you have that playfulness. And I don't know, in my experience, friendships that I've had that have continued like that playfulness and relaxed nature tends to remain in place.
I think so. I mean, I think it is funny. Like, I have people in my life that I basically met right before high school that I'm still friendly with. I'm still good friends with, actually. They're like, that's my core. Like, it's the old cliche, and I guess a lot of guys say this, and maybe women say this about girlfriends they've had for a long time, but it's almost like they're my brothers, you know? They're more my family in some ways, but perhaps even more than my own family. There's not many people survive from my family right now, but yeah, I love these guys, and we drive each other crazy, you know? Like I'm sure I drive Chris crazy with certain things that I'm like, you know, I get stuck on something, but like we talk it out, we hug it out, and we see each other because he's in San Francisco, so I don't always see him, but we talk like almost every day, which is crazy. I never thought, even when we're not talking about music, it's just like, how's it going? You know, talking about the Prius, we both have Priuses, and we're like, oh, the battery, you know, I don't know what to do about this. And did you ever have this problem with the Prius? So yeah, it's good. It's good to have people that you've known for a long, long time. I think so. I'm starting to realize that now. Yeah. A funny, actually, sorry to keep going, but a funny thought that occurred to me was like, I think for years I'd always been like, oh, you know, these bands that have been playing together since they were kids, like what is that like when you have people in your life that, and then I'm like, what now? I kind of just, this was like about 2 months ago. I'm like, oh, I've got that. I've got that, you know, like my buddy Dave did the string arrangements on that, the Mousetrap on the album. And I've known him since junior high. We were kids together. And then I knew Chris shortly after that. Kind of crazy. I have that thing that I've been not realizing that I had. And it's been a really wonderful feeling to have that realization.
Were you and Chris like got the music bug around the same time and started playing music and
Yeah,
stuff?
we all did, and it was a combination of things. My sister had a boyfriend at the time that they both were like living with us. She's older than me by 10 years, right? Or was old. She passed on, but her boyfriend brought his like complete record collection over, and I was like 12 years old, and he had like, you know, all these Residents records and Jean-Luc Ponty and weird like Nick Lowe bootleg stuff. And I was like, so that was my thing. And then Dave was like into, actually, Dave bought Devo and Sex Pistols for his brother as a joke when we were kids. And we listened to it and we were like, this is not a joke. We were like trying to we were talking about the Sex Pistols, and we were like, it's kind of like Led Zeppelin but like rougher, you know? We didn't know how to say it. And I think Devo seemed kind of almost like the Residents. They were scary, which is funny to me now because they're anything but scary to me now, but at the time we were like, this isn't just a joke, you know? And Chris was along for that ride too. We were sharing stuff, and Chris had an accident when he was a kid. I'm not going to get into the details, but it's kind of a wacky story. It's really his to tell. But anyway, needless to say, he got a settlement from his school because he lost the tip of his finger on a door, and it's very insignificant. But he got this money, and when he turned 18, we had a summer of just like buying records and buying a Porta studio and recording music with this band we had called the Plastic Device. It was Dave and Chris and I and Dan, who's in this band, the Special Pillow now. And we all kind of became Hypno Love Wheel with Chris helping to produce some of that early stuff. But yeah, we had a summer of just like buying stuff. Late, you know, seeing shows, going to the diners and eating like rice pudding and like, you know, 3 in the morning or something. Like, yeah. So, yeah, we were all like music fans in a big, big way.
Yeah, so you truly are you're one of those one of those
Yeah.
guys.
Yeah. I'm one of those guys. I know. We're like, yeah, we're all like fanboys at heart, I think, like anything. And honestly, like most musicians I meet and I know, they're kind of fanboys too. Everyone's got a favorite, oh, this band or this album or everything I do, I try to, and you wouldn't even know the connection. You'd be like, how is that even the same thing? But yeah. people take things, put their spin on it, and that's what I was saying earlier. Like even if I wanted to do like an ELO album down to the, I wouldn't be able to do it because it just becomes something. It transmogrifies in the process. No matter how hard you make it, your voice isn't going to sound the same. Your lyrics are going to be different. Your instrumentation is going to be, what can you play? What can't you play? Like, it just becomes something completely different, which is the beautiful thing about music, because it's just like that. I guess that's why rock and roll just has such a longevity, because it's pretty plastic medium. Like, there's so many varieties and forms of it. Some of it people would be like, that's not even rock and roll, but well, I don't know.
Well, and I mean, just kind of thinking about this playfulness thing, I think that especially maybe that transition from when they were sort of leaving the Move behind and becoming ELO,
Yeah.
some of that music is like you kind of feel like it's almost like a dare, right?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Well, it's weird, right? Because the Move is doing, they're doing orchestrated stuff. So like, why did you feel the need to start ELO? But I think they were like, no, we were gonna go full orchestrate. Like, we wanna have on every song there's gonna be cellos and violin and horns or whatever. The Move is honestly, it's one of my favorite bands ever. And it has been, I mean, I'm saying ever, but probably since I was like in my late 20s when I really went deep into the Move. And they have so many stylistic changes in the 60s, but they're just, the albums are awesome. They're like incredibly poppy. Sometimes they're heavy as all get out. And you're right, like the whole transition thing, because Message from the Country is like that to me. That's a weird, that's like the ELO, almost like an ELO album, right? But it's not, but it's that weird transition album. And they're recording that while they're recording the first ELO record, which is really crazy. I think that's the case anyway, but yeah, talk about like, leaving your work behind to start a flower farm. I mean, they left this band that I think was like popular enough to keep going, and they were like, no, nope. It's crazy. They were very, very weird and kind of interesting time. And then the first ELO record is like nothing like where what they eventually get to. It's more like, it's the orchestration on it is more like, it's less poppy and more like, I don't know, it's just intense. It's super intense.
It's like, yeah, this isn't Rock and Roll is King. That's.
Yeah, I know. I know. It's so funny. Like, it's, yeah, they're just such a, it's a, that's such a, it's such a great band. And weirdly, like Wizard and all those other things, the split off bands, all that stuff, like I came into fairly recent, but and I love all that. I love all that. But taking the deep dive into the ELO was like, wow, I didn't realize that this album sounded like, or I didn't realize that song came off of this album, or like, wow, I never heard this song before. Like, there were so many songs, and it was kind of shocking to me because ELO was like the biggest thing in the world when I was growing up, but I just didn't know a lot of it.
Well, it's interesting to me too, because I was, in listening to this record, I was like, if I didn't know anything about the track record, if I didn't know anything about the past, this just showed up before me. It's like, oh, this is a new band. This is contemporary.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Well, that, I love that you have that reaction to it, because people who know me, I think, feel like, I've heard people say, that sounds like you, I'm like, that's kind of interesting. It was a big stretch for me in the sense that like Chris pushed the envelope on certain things that like, my initial reaction would be like, really? Should we do, well, but I think in collaboration, sometimes it's kind of more exciting to go over the cliff, to just be like, okay, let's see where it takes us. And we can always dial something back or just scrap it or do whatever. But honestly, I think when we both pushed each other, Like, I mean, the type of the way this album was recorded was crazy, right? Because basically, like, I demoed songs and I basically had kind of a structure for a song, and I'd give it to Chris, and then he would be like, we should slow down the tempo. Can you know, what about if we put another verse in? Or he had like these ideas, or like, let's do this one with a full orchestration. And that right there, that was probably the big, and I was kind of like, oh no, I could never do it. And we did it, and I was like, oh, you know what? That's kind of cool. I was like, I really was into it in a way that I wasn't initially. So that kind of set the tone for trying to push each other. And then I'm trying to think now. Oh, so then there's a song, You Are Not Alone. And Chris kind of deconstructed that one a little bit too. It was a little bit more straightforward, but I had just seen the OCs the night before with the two drummers, and I'm like, what about two drummers on it, you know? And we have a buddy out in Norway, Arne, who has a great band called Rural Tapes, and he was in a version of I Was a King, which is a great band from Norway. Arne would send back these drums like overnight. We'd be like, hey, just take out my timing, you know, my drum stuff, and just put in yours. And I said, just, you know, play like Bev Bevan, like do something. And it'd be like, you know, like all like some of these songs of playing, it's just like, it's not crazy, but it's like, it's kind of a throwback. Like, you don't really hear that kind of drumming, I think. It is a little bit of a throw, like kind of rock drumming thing. But yeah, so we said, oh, could you double that up? And he was like, yep. And he doubled it up. It's like Christmas morning. You know, we sent it out the day before, and the next day we'd be like, did you see what Arne sent? Because you don't really, it is a collaboration. You don't know what you're gonna get. I mean, he'd serve the song, and Chris always served the song, and I served the song, but like, yeah, like whoever we invited to come on board, we'd be like, do what you want to do. You know, with this in mind, like there were some parameters, like we're trying to do like if ELO met the Buzzcocks, right? That was for Wall, and then we send that to Dave Rick of Phantom Tollbooth and Bongwater and King Missile, and another good friend of mine forever. And he came back with that crazy, which now I have to play live, which is a serious challenge. But you know, so he came back with that, and we're like, wow, that kind of just elevated the song to another level. So I write the lyrics, I write the songs, I have the chord structures, but like, it music's so pliable. You get somebody else into the mix, and suddenly it's like, wow, we just put like a rocket engine on this thing, or we just like, you know, added a new wing to the house, or whatever you do. Like, we put a new bathroom in. Like, it just changes everything when other people get involved. You know, Dave, it seemed like Dave wasn't going to be able to deliver something. So Chris reached out to Kurt Block from Fastbacks. But while he did that, Dave came back with this riff. And we were like, well, now we've got Kurt on the. And so we said, today, you know, we're gonna get Kurt to play. Is that cool? And then we went to Kurt, and he played, you know, along with Dave, which he was excited because they'd never played together before. So, but they've known each other for years, you know. So he was like, you know, and Kurt's just such a sweetheart, and he did it overnight. Like he's like, we were like, this is insane. It's like Christmas every day. So there's a lot of that on this record. A lot of that.
And this is for all the angst, I suppose, about, oh, file sharing and so forth. This is something that would have never been possible in the old days because you would have all had to have been in the same place and.
What I did in my past life was a highly like technologically driven workflow. I ran like a production studio for a company that doesn't really exist anymore except in name only, but it's like a network thing. But I had to have all these artists working in all the Adobe products, and then we had a file share, and then sometimes, you know, during COVID we were like collaborating. So like, I would rather be in a room together, right? But because of the limitations financially, sometimes it's like if this is the way you can get your creativity out, I always hesitate to call it, your artistic, whatever, but like if this is the way you can do it and you can do it these days, I'm grateful for it because I was super, super happy with the results. And it wasn't just like we would take every, we'd be like, oh, this was the wrong note, or can you do this? Or so there was some like direction going on, but for the most part, like it was pretty seamless. And when you get people on the other side that know how to do it, like Arne was just like a genius at like breaking his drums down, sending them out. Like he knew how to set things up. And I can't say enough good things about Chris because he has the technical skill to take stuff and make it sound even better than what you captured in terms of the sonic quality. Like he it's not there's no fakery going on. He just understands EQs in a way that I don't. He understands programs that can like, remove unwanted, people talking in the background and stuff like that. So you get this more like it is definitely like one of the most produced things I've done since I was a younger person in Hypno Love Wheel, where we actually went into a studio and like but he just did a phenomenal job, and he does a lot of like black magic sorcery. He'll be like I start on this computer, then I do it over here, and then I mean I'm sounding like an idiot right now, but his whole thing is so mind-blowing to me that I'm just like yeah, okay. Like, go for
You've been listening to a conversation with Stephen Hunking of Dewclaw. Dewclaw's latest release, ELF, is out now. You can learn more about Dewclaw via their official Bandcamp page and find them on Instagram as well. Hunking's Flower Farm, Mooncake Flower Farm, can be found online at mooncakeflowers.com. Our digital producers are Carly Cooper, Beth Golay, and Hugo Fan. Our theme music is composed and performed by Torin Anderson. You can learn more about this show and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. Send us your questions and comments at info@kmuw.org and find all the latest programming notes on that website as well. Thanks again for listening. We will see you next time.
Planet Money helps you understand the economy. We find the people at the center of the story.
Garbage in New York, that was like a controlled substance.
We show you how money influences everything.
Tell me what you like by telling me how you spend your money.
And we dig until we get answers.
I had a bad feeling you're going to bring that up.
Planet Money finds out. All you have to do is listen. The Planet Money podcast from NPR.